For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Tuesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where you get all of our new podcasts, articles, news and notes. Literally every bit of fantasy baseball content gets shared out over there. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, you can check all of that out at SportsEthos.com. We are going to be doing a mailbag episode today. We got a ton of responses earlier on Twitter when I posted this out. Nearly 100 questions that we got. I think it actually did end up getting over 100. So I really appreciate all of you guys who are participating in these. If you do want to get your questions answered, we do these mailbags every couple of weeks. And sometimes, you know, I will try and answer what I can just in terms of like replies and DMs. Sometimes there are a lot of notifications and things do get missed, which is why I do like to do these mailbags every now and again. So we're going to be going through a lot of your questions. There are some, actually quite a few, that kind of duplicate. So we don't need to touch on every single one of them because there's a lot of questions that talk about Esteri Ruiz, and there's a lot of questions about Leiter who just got called up. And we're going to touch on them. We probably won't go through like every single question about every single player, but we'll touch on most of the main ones, especially those that I think will apply to a lot of you different guys. So the first one, Esteri Ruiz, is he an everyday player going forward? This is honestly one that I can't answer with any degree of certainty. I would like to say that he probably will play most days, but the way that the Athletics have currently done things with him this year, I don't really know. Even in his first game up, like, he wasn't starting. He came in as a pinch hitter, and then he promptly hit a home run yesterday. So I would imagine that he is probably going to be in the lineup fairly regularly. But as I say this today, again, he is not in the lineup for Tuesday. So Monday and Tuesday called up. You know, he could have been in the lineup for either game, and he's not in either one. So will he be an everyday player? I'd have to lean probably not. I think that he's probably somebody that's worth keeping an eye on in 15-teamers. And if you have him in a 15, like, that's totally fine. I have him. I only had one share, and it was in a 15-team league, and I've since cut him. And I don't really feel much regret. I don't think that there's a ton of upside. I was just like kind of one share that I took, just like, okay, maybe he's able to have more power. And it looks like he might actually have a little bit more power, but it's really just the way the A's are going to use him that worry me a lot. That he's, you know, the profile is fairly flawed as well. He's not somebody who's a terribly well-rounded player for fantasy. So, I mean, there are a few concerns that I have here. I think the power is something that could be a little bit legit. Obviously, the speed we know is great, but it's a terrible ballpark. It's a terrible lineup around him. So there's not a hell of a lot of interest that I have in Esteri Ruiz. If you're in like a 10 or a 12-team league and you're seeing him on the waiver wire, I think you can probably leave him there on the waiver wire. Is Nico Hoerner going to figure things out, and is he a better option than Willy Adames? I think that Nico Hoerner will generally figure things out. Now, last year was kind of, everything went right for him. He was a top 50 player based on a lot of different rankings. I don't think he's going to get there again necessarily, but I think he's somebody who's going to steal probably in like the 25 to 30 base range. I know he doesn't have any yet, but I wouldn't worry too much. I think he's probably still about a 25 steal guy. I think the batting average will be about 270 or so. Like, I think he will generally give you, you know, roughly what you were expecting, but not to the same degree as last year. I don't think that he's somebody that you should be cutting yet, especially based on where you drafted Nico Hoerner. If you're really sick and tired and truly want to just get rid of him, then the option is to just trade him and sell low. It wouldn't be to cut him because there is still value. Like, based on what he did last year, where he was drafted just a few weeks ago, you got to remember, guys, it's April 16th. There was still, like, hasn't been a massive change in value based on where you drafted a lot of these players. I wouldn't be looking at Nico Hoerner now drastically differently than you did a few weeks ago. He's off to a slow start. I think he'll be generally fine. That being said, I think Willy Adames is probably going to have a higher ranking at the end of the season. He'll probably return more value. I think he's a more well-rounded fantasy player. But I wouldn't be dropping Horner at the expense of picking up Adames. Like, you'd probably almost definitely have somebody who's worse than Nico Horner that you can be picking up, or maybe you have somebody you can put on the IL, or there's got to be some other way to go about adding Willy Adames. But if he's sitting on the waiver wire, I mean, he shouldn't be. He's rostered in 82% of Yahoo leagues. It's not likely that he's on the waiver wire in most of them. But if you are seeing him out there, he's definitely somebody that you can think about taking a shot on. Mitch Haniger, we've got a couple questions about Mitch Haniger. Is he worth picking up when he's been healthy? A lot of people are saying, like we've talked about here, like he was amazing in Seattle when he was healthy a couple seasons ago. And so far, so good. He's batting .286. He's hit 3 home runs. He's playing pretty much every day. I think he's had one day off this year. He's batting 4th or 5th almost every single time. He actually batted 2nd the other day against the Cubs as well. And he's only 21% rostered. So the specific question I got here on him was, is he worth a shot in a league that only allows you 64 moves per season? I would think even in that kind of case, I would say yes. You get to take 64 shots throughout the year on different players to pick up. It's a little bit limiting for sure, but I think a guy like Mitch Haniger with that potential upside is somebody that would be worth taking a shot on. And most of you are not going to have those restrictions. That's a fairly specific thing. He is worth taking a shot on. 21% on Yahoo is a really, really low number for the upside that we know is still there with Mitch Haniger. And he's shown it so far this year. It looks really, really good what we've seen out of him. He's almost matched his home run total from last season, which was only 6 and 211 at-bats, but just, you know, he's looking really, really solid, and I think that you can buy back into the he's back in a place where he's had success before narrative, because so far that has been working out for him as well. But even statistically speaking, you know, forget the narratives, things look very good for Mitch Haniger. We've got somebody who traded Cole Reagans today for Colton Cowser and Adbert Alzolay. Somebody really capitalized, in my opinion, on Colton Cowser's hot streak for that trade. I don't think it's a good move to trade Cole Reagans right now. I mean, if you're going to trade him, everybody has a price. There's a certain price that you can, you know, pay for any player that would make it worthwhile. I think the price tag for Cole Reagans here sold him a bit short. So I think it's realistic to say that he's probably at worst about a top 15 starting pitcher as of today in Major League Baseball. Colton Cowser has had a really hot week. And you know, like we've talked about here a couple times on the show, I do like him, and I think he's worth picking up and all that, but this is a really great move by the guy who had Cowser to sell high, because there's a decent chance he still ends up as a platoon bat more often than not. He did play against a lefty the other day. Is that going to happen every single time? I'm not totally certain about that. And I think that, you know, he's really good, but he's not in the same category of player, fantasy-wise, just in terms of overall talent as Cole Reagans, in terms of what the overall dollar value is going to look like at the end of the season. And Adbert Alzolay, you know, the second piece of that trade, I think he's a very, you know, serviceable second closer on your team, but he's probably about the 15th or so best reliever in Major League Baseball. Off the top of my head, 15 or so, and not even reliever. I'm talking about fantasy closer ranking type of thing. He's probably about 15th. If you're going to sell Cole Reagans right now, who has been to this point, you know, if the season ended today, he'd be probably on the ballot for the Cy Young in the American League. You better be selling him and getting back a top 50 type of player. And I just don't think that even the combination of Cowser and Alzolay really is enough for me that I would have wanted to move off of Cole Reagans. Now, the guy who's doing this, he says he had a deep pitching staff and he could kind of afford the move. But I just don't think that this is really a great move to be making at this point. If you're going to trade Reagans, it better be for a hell of a lot. You know, if you're the person who is in a 2-for-1 trade, if you're trading the best player in that trade and getting back the two, you know, you're trading the one, getting back the two, most of the time, you're getting the shittier end of the trade. It doesn't always work that way if you trade, you know, whatever example off the top of my, you could take like Gleyber Torres, trade him for, you know, Juan Soto and Aaron Judge or whatever, just to use an extreme, extreme example. Like, obviously, you're winning that trade, but like 99 times out of 100, you're losing the trade if you are trading the one good player to get the two lesser players back. A lot of trade questions. I won't get into a lot of them specifically because I did answer a lot of you guys over here on Twitter. I'll get into a couple of them as we go along, but I more want to focus on the ads and the drop questions. So specifically right now, it just as like a general point, and I'll get into a couple of examples. If people are overreacting to things, you can really be taking advantage of it at this point in time. I don't expect that it's going to be in a lot of leagues. And just looking at the numbers, it doesn't appear to be many. But George Kirby has been dropped by some people. And I had a question today in the mailbag. Should I pick up George Kirby for Flaherty or Michael King? And I'm thinking, I had to do a double take. George Kirby on the waiver wire already in the middle of April, the day after a good start, he's been dropped today on Yahoo by about 120 people. Let me get the exact number there. He's been dropped by 114 people today on Yahoo, the day after a good start. Even last week after the terrible starts, it wasn't justifiable. Today, it's just utterly ridiculous. I have no idea why people are already giving up on a guy like George Kirby, who is their number one starting pitcher. But if you are seeing him on any kind of waiver wire, or any player who was drafted in the top 50 or 75, for that matter, on the waiver wire, do whatever you can to pick them up. Nick Castellanos, I got a couple of questions about him today as well. People are very worried about the slow start, and I totally get it. You know, I have a few shares of Nick Castellanos, but this isn't something I'm overly worried about. He's still batting right in the middle of one of the better lineups in baseball that will get going. I know they haven't been great, but they'll be fine. There's no real need to worry about Turner, Harper, Schwarber, Castellanos, this grouping of players getting going. There's just, in my mind, it's really a non-concern for all of these players. A couple of questions about Harper today as well. And I get it. You know, you spent good draft capital. You're nervous. It's been a few weeks. They haven't really produced. Castellanos has not hit a home run yet. He's batting 177. But if you're dropping him, that's the kind of overreaction that I just caution against. You know, a player who's a top 100 pick, who has a track record of success, who last year was a 30-homer, 10-stolen-base, 270 average type of guy with 100 ribbies. You can't be cutting bait on Castellanos for a long time. Not even just like give him a week or 2 weeks. You have to give him a very, very, very long time until you're anywhere close to cutting him. Kirby Yates, tons of questions about Kirby Yates as well. He actually might have been the guy with the most questions about. He got the save last night for Texas. Right now, he looks like the guy to be owning in Texas's bullpen. Leclerc is not in a position of trust. David Robertson, I think, could potentially get some saves here and there, but in the interim, it's Kirby Yates. And this is going to be a huge headache in a lot of cases. Unless you're really desperate for saves, like if you drafted Leclerc as your SP2 and you're screwed now, like, yeah, you need to pick up Yates. In a lot of cases, I would say try and avoid this situation if possible, because there's nothing to say that it won't be David Robertson again next week. Or not David Robertson again, but David Robertson getting in some saves, and then Jose Leclerc again, because eventually he'll probably get back into the circle of trust. And it's going to be like a three-way committee. It's like I actually don't know if it'll ever be a committee. But there's going to be three guys that we're always going to be wondering, is it going to be this guy or that guy on a given day? And I think it's more trouble than it's worth. You know, I don't think any of them are that great of a talent that they really justify holding if they don't have the role. You know, sometimes you could argue with Leclerc, it's really like, it depends on the day. In the playoffs last year, he looked amazing. You know, this year he's looked absolutely dreadful. There's a chance, there's a good chance that they give him another shot in the ninth inning, but I think that nobody here is really truly in like the must roster territory. Kirby Yates, I think if you need some saves, especially short term, and you're not planning on this being a long-term fix, then you can go for it. But don't think that you got Kirby Yates now and that's 30 saves for you, because it's very likely going to be like, you know, 10 or 11, best case scenario here, and then they'll try something out with Leclerc, or they'll do something, because I don't think that Kirby Yates is a long-term solution. I think that he is the short-term guy, but I don't think this is something that I expect to last, really. When do I determine when to drop somebody? There's so many hot pitchers and hitters, but when I look at my team, it's tough deciding if someone is droppable in a 10 or a 12-team league. There's definitely different schools of thought on this. You know, I've kind of touched on this already, and I've touched on it a lot recently, but if somebody's drafted inside the top 150 picks, they're getting at least the month of April, and then we're reevaluating. If somebody has been taken in the 150 to end of draft, you know, type of range, most of them are probably about 300 picks, I'd be a lot more willing to cut them if they've looked absolutely terrible. Parker Meadows has looked absolutely dreadful. Somebody that I had a lot of hope for. He didn't cost a lot. He's looked like shit. Get him out of here. You know, it's a little bit different with like a Jordan Walker, where there's a higher prospect pedigree, better team. You know, I would give him a little bit more time, but he's also kind of on the cut line. But that's kind of the general thought process. And it goes into draft capital still at this point of the year. I don't consider that to be the sunk cost fallacy type of deal. Eventually, it'll get there. If you're still holding on to a player in like June or July because you drafted him in the top 100, that's not a good reason to. Most of those guys are still going to be holds. But if there's somebody that's just dreadful in July and you're saying, well, he's a top 100 pick, That would be wrong. But to say that in the middle of April is not wrong. That's still a good process to be holding these guys that you spent a very large investment on. Not at all a situation that you need to worry about it from that point of view. Let's talk about Luis Hill. I don't really know what to make of him. I've got a couple questions about him, specifically regarding deeper leagues. 16 and 15-team leagues were the two questions. I think in 12s and 10s, he's somebody that you can cut. But in those 15s, there's really not a hell of a lot you're cutting him for. If you were using that spot for streaming, and I think a few people probably, and I know I had one league like this myself, where I picked him up as a streamer for that two-start week. And then I was like, okay, I kind of like what I saw. So maybe I'll take that streaming spot and think I don't need it as a streaming spot. And I have Luis Hill now as somebody that I'm pretty confident in. And it hasn't looked so great. You know, these last couple starts, specifically yesterday, he walked 7 batters. It was really, really ugly stuff. So I think he's a lot more cuttable in those shallower formats. Even in the 15-teamers, I mean, if you want to go back and revert that spot to streaming, I think that that's probably wise. But it really depends on who you're cutting him for. If you're just cutting him for the sake of I don't like him anymore and I'll pick up whoever, then that's not the right way to go about it. If you're dropping him because there's legitimately somebody that is worth picking up on the waivers, you know, somebody panic dropped Garrett Crochet, or there's, you know, so many examples of players that shouldn't be available. But if there's, you know, a 12-team viable player who's just sitting there on like your 15-team waiver wire, then yeah, I think that that's a situation where you'd probably make the change. But I think Luis Hill is somebody that could figure it out. The command is definitely a concern, not something I think that is unfixable. But I think in shallower formats, you can kind of move on. For the specific question I'm looking at, 16-team league, I think in that case, you're probably okay to hold on for now. Just because in the 16-team league, I really don't think that there's a hell of a lot there. Wyatt Langford, also a very popular topic of discussion over the last few days on Twitter. He's already been labeled a bust because that's what we do here. We overreact to everything. This particular question is talking about the quality of contact metrics. StatCast says he should be batting about 35 points lower than he is. When do we start thinking he's not ready for the big leagues? Also, 98th percentile speed, but zero steals so far, not even a single attempt. So those StatCast numbers, I was looking at them with Wyatt Langford. They don't normalize already. Like they're not going to be, you know, what you're going to see over the course of a whole season just based on a very small sample size. They're not great, most of the numbers. There's some that are promising. Chase rate is good. Whiff, strikeout rate is good. He's walking at a good rate as well. You know, those numbers, like the expected batting average, the expected slugging, the average exit velocity, they're not great. But they're also not anything that I'm going to be looking at and panicking on. Like Wyatt Langford, even just looking at the traditional stats, he's batting .267. He's been getting base hits. He's not overmatched by major league hitting. Even right now, he's in the midst of a 4-game hitting streak. So it's not like he's just, you know, looking like shit up there at the plate. He's looked all right. He's not hitting home runs. He's not stealing bases. But I think those things will come for him. This is not a situation where I'm panicking and cutting Wyatt Langford, specifically if you drafted him late. You know, if you drafted early and you got like picks in the 200s or so, you know, and you really want to cut him in a shallow league, that's a different story. I still wouldn't want to be doing it. But if you're drafting him inside of the top 100 or so and you're cutting him, then that's, again, like we talked about earlier, just really, really, really bad stuff. I think that he's still a hold everywhere. It does make it easier if your draft shares are in the 250-ish pick range. But in any event, I'm really, really not thinking about cutting him at this point. Level of Hunter Brown panic. I'm not that panicked. And as I say this, I know that he is going to be pitching tonight against, it was the Braves, actually. I thought it was the Dodgers because I heard it said somewhere else it wasn't the Dodgers. It's the Braves. Either way, it might as well be the Dodgers. The same kind of scariness. I'm okay with starting him tonight because I love Hunter Brown, and I'm just thinking that this is one of those gut calls. He gets right tonight against the Braves. We saw it happen with Bailey Ober. He got absolutely knocked around against Kansas City and then figured it out next time out against the Dodgers. I just think that we are going to see Hunter Brown kind of get things figured out here. Maybe it doesn't happen on this particular start, and Atlanta is admittedly not a great team to, you know, have a get-right start, but I still think that Hunter Brown is very safe. If you look at the advanced metrics, you look at the strikeout minus walk rates, the prospect pedigree, the good organization, he's definitely not somebody that I would be panicking and dropping. Certainly not in 15-teamers. Really, honestly, not anywhere. I think that Hunter Brown, if you're in like an 8-team league and you're really worried and there's tons of options, sure, but I mean, I'm still not at the point of panicking and cutting him at all. Not even close. Dalton Varsho. Are we giving up on Dalton Varsho? Absolutely not. I mean, he just hit a couple home runs over the weekend. They sat him the day after, which I know there's a lot of talk about, like, are you even able to carry over hot streaks? Is that something that you can even define? Is it even a real thing? Momentum is a real thing in my eyes. If a guy is starting to get the things, you know, sorted out at the plate, he hits a couple home runs on consecutive days and then you sit him. It's not great. It doesn't send a great mental message, whether it's something that's real or not real. I do buy into that kind of thing. Toronto's kind of a poorly run team, if you haven't figured that out at this point. From the top down, there's just it's a shit show, realistically speaking. So Varsho might sit more than we want him to sit, and we've seen it happen like three times over the last 2 weeks he sat, which is honestly more than I thought. I thought he'd be somebody who's playing like 155 games this year. It might be like 135 to 140, but I'm still not worried. Not that worried enough that I'd be cutting him or anything. I think we're still looking at a 25-15 type of bat. And I think that Dalton Varsho is somebody that is definitely worthy of roster spots in any league at this point still. Ryan O'Hearn, should I pick him up? He seems to be breaking out. It looks really promising. I got to be honest. I thought that this was just like a whatever type of thing last year with Ryan O'Hearn. It was like a random good season that just kind of happens sometimes. He has been carrying that over. He gets trusted to bat third and fourth in a very, very good lineup in Baltimore. First base and outfield eligible. And only 9% rostered on Yahoo. I definitely think that he is worth a pickup. He looks fantastic. Holiday or Westberg rest of season? I would very slightly lean to Westberg just because there's a little bit more experience there. I know we're not talking about a lot more experience, but at least we have a little bit more to go off of. It might take Holiday, you know, a couple of months to get going and get used to major league pitching, where Westberg already has that under his belt from last year, and he seems to have hit the ground running. So if you had to ask me for this year, it would be Westberg, but in the long run, it would still be Jackson Holiday. I had a crazy one about Kirby Yates. Somebody asked if they should be dropping Josh Hader or Edwin Diaz for Kirby Yates. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There is no way that you should be doing that at all. I had somebody ask a different question about third base options. They lost Royce Lewis and Jake Berger at third. It's a brutal position to start off with, and we've already lost a couple of players. A couple of guys that I would look into picking up first off is Brett Beatty. I still think that he's undervalued. He's still somebody that I've been very, very interested in. I drafted a lot of him, and so far he's batting .316. He's hit a home run. You know, he's batting usually fifth, playing most days. Like, he's looked really, really good, 23% rostered. He's somebody to take a look at. Anthony Rendon is the other one, though. And this is a really strange one for me, but he's been really good recently. He's 15 for his last 42. He's even stolen a base this week, even if you just shorten the sample size, 9 for his last 20. He's leading off. He's playing every day. You could do a lot worse at this point. I don't know how long it's going to last necessarily, but I think at this point you can take a chance on Anthony Rendon if you need some third base help. I think that you could do a lot worse. But, you know, at the same time, don't expect that it's like old Anthony Rendon either. I think that you can expect, you know, decent production. If you look at what he did in Washington and you think, like, can he do 60% of that, 50, 60% of that? I think that that's pretty realistic, but it shouldn't be something where you're thinking he's back. He's absolutely back. Couple of questions about Parker Meadows. I kind of addressed it earlier, but I'm just kind of ready to be done with him in shallow formats. If you're in a 15-teamer and you want to hold on, then you can do that, but he's not leading off anymore. He's at the bottom of the order, not playing every single day. It's looking terrible. He's batting 061. Actually, he was batting 061 coming into today, and then today was another 0-4 for him. So let's see what that batting average went down to after today. It is 056. Holy shit. He is 2 for his first 36. It's not going to always be that bad, but he's somebody that should be, you know, he should be dropped unless you just are in like a, you know, a 45 team league and there's really just nobody there. Henry Davis, couple questions about Henry Davis and what we're doing with him. I think that he's a drop. You know, it's really been ugly stuff from Henry Davis. He's not playing every single day. He's batting eighth or ninth, and even when he is getting into the order, he's batting .170. He hasn't hit a homer, hasn't stolen a base. Yes, Manny Grandal just got activated today too, and I've heard it suggested, and I kind of agree with it, that he could potentially get sent down. It's been really ugly stuff. he's either going to be, you know, riding the pine consistently or sent down, because I don't think they can continue to send him out with this kind of production. I think he's a drop unless you're absolutely desperate in two catcher leagues. He's just not somebody that I think you can really justify holding on to. He was kind of a nice hope experiment this year to some extent for fantasy managers, but it's just not looking great. He's not somebody that I would really be holding out hope for, that it's all of a sudden going to just massively turn around for him. Guys, that's going to do it, though. Those are kind of the main questions. Oh, I should mention Leiter. I haven't mentioned Jack Leiter yet. That is the last one here. So he got called up, and he is going to be starting on Thursday against the Tigers. Is this something that is going to be long-term? Is he going to just be in the rotation now? I would think that he's probably more a short-term guy, and he's a decent streamer, but he's not somebody that I'd get my – like, he's getting added in a crazy number of leagues already, up to over 20% of Yahoo, actually up to 23%. We have more than 20,000 ads of Jack Leiter today. I just don't know that this is something that's going to stick necessarily. Maybe it does. I don't know if Bradford's injury is going to be that serious. They're going to have Scherzer coming back fairly soon, and then later on it's going to be DeGrom. So how long he's actually able to stay up and how many starts he's going to make, I don't think it's that many. If you want to take a shot and add him ahead of that Thursday start, then that's fine. But I wouldn't be saying, you know, if he's just arrived at a big league level and he's fully ready. Because even from what we've seen at the minor league level, he looks better this year, but it's been kind of a rough go for him in the minor leagues. It's been pretty bad, in all honesty. Like, the strikeouts have been good, but the walks have been terrible. The ERAs and the expected ERAs, the ERA estimators have all been awful, terrible. Like, just beyond awful. And there have been injuries as well, but he's not somebody that I'm willing to fully dive in with both feet like a lot of people have here. 20,000 ads today does seem a little bit excessive, but people get excited about prospects. It's always about the hot new thing, but it's good to remember always this time of year, just be patient and don't overreact. That's kind of what I'm here for, and everybody in the fantasy writing podcasting world should be right now just telling you not to overreact to anything that you're seeing. But that will do it, guys. If you want to go through all these questions on Twitter, I answered just about all of them. There was a couple of repeat questions that I didn't answer, and a couple of random, really complicated ones from people that didn't follow me. That it's like 22 team OPS and this and all that. But it's like, we get it. I can't get to everything, but I got to pretty much everything. If you guys want to go through there and check it out at JoelRico99, I'm sure there's something that follows something going on in your league or some overlap there anyway, because there's a lot of people asking roughly the same type of questions this time of year. But it's good to try and just calm everybody down, because everybody is just super, super reactive. But we will come back tomorrow with our more usual show. We'll talk about the quick hits. We'll talk about the most added and dropped players of the day. And if there's any other massive news, we'll also get to that. But until then, of course, reach out over on Twitter, JoelRico99, EthosFantasyBB, and SportsEthos.com is the website. Guys, we'll see you tomorrow. But until then, take care and cheers.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.